Bob Schoenman.
And Maya Schoen, coming to you Tuesday, February 18th, 2003. Huge waves of demonstrations not seen since the Vietnam War jammed more than 600 towns and cities around the world, from Tasmania to Iceland. They marched against the war in Iraq. Up to 30 million people demonstrating worldwide, including 6 million in Europe. That was the report from The Guardian in Great Britain on Monday, February 17th.
The scale of this transcends Vietnam, Maya. Actually, it is unparalleled. There is probably no such event in modern history of mobilizations of masses of people on this scale. It is qualitatively different. When The Guardian in London acknowledges over 30 million people worldwide, 6 million people in Europe, 2.5 million, it says 3 million people in Spain, upwards of 2 million people in Italy. Nothing like this has ever happened. Nothing has ever happened on this scale in the history of Great Britain. There were nearly 2 million people in the city of London alone. The qualitative nature of this mass outpouring of humanity reflects not only a rejection of the permanent war of U.S. capitalism and U.S. imperialism. It is as well the beginning of a genuine rebellion against a class war upon the very survival capacity of huge masses of people on a planetary scale. The assault on living standards, the attack on the gains of working people of the past 100 years, are reflected in this unparalleled outpouring cutting across all sectors of nominal political opinion. And it represents an enormous moment of opportunity to build a movement that is not just directed against a specific war, but challenges the system for which such wars are endemic and for which the poverty and the epidemic disease and the exploitation and the mass slaughter that follow upon the control of human resources and natural resources, that these arrangements are challenged systemically by an aroused populace.
From Antarctica, even in the scientific outpost in Antarctica, there was a rally. And throughout the world, not just in the major capitals of Rome, London, Berlin, New York, and San Francisco the day after, but in cities throughout the United States and throughout the various countries. For instance, in Australia, 150,000 people demonstrated in Melbourne on Friday. 16,000 activists marched in Canberra, 10,000 in Perth, 15,000 in Newcastle, north of Sydney. And here in the San Francisco Bay Area, where 200,000 people at least, or possibly 250,000 people, amassed in San Francisco on Sunday, you had on Saturday demonstrations in cities throughout California, Los Angeles, Sacramento, the capital, San Jose, and even in the small cities such as Vallejo, where we live, there were over 200, close to 250 people gathered in the center of Vallejo. So throughout California, throughout the United States, in city after city, in town after town, in village after village, people were out in the streets.
Headline of the San Francisco Chronicle this morning is "Huge Peaceful Crowd Protests Stance on Iraq." And at San Francisco rally, over 200,000 people seek alternative to U.S. war. Rare is it that the established press acknowledges numbers of this magnitude. Organizers have placed the numbers in San Francisco as between 250,000 and 300,000 people. Nothing has occurred on this scale in the history of the state of California, and it is a reflection of what we are discussing here, the qualitative shift in perception of the nature of rule that brings us this war. And it is not unnoticed by the public at large, and is commented upon in many of the articles that describe this outpouring, that people understand that they are being terrorized by U.S. rulers. And that includes the fabricated alerts, the orange alert, which remains in place in the United States today.
Fabrication, orange alerts, and also the lies and the conditions before the people of the United States. When the state of California announces that it must cut back on food programs for the elderly, that it must reimpose large classrooms after reducing class size, when it says it must take away health benefits for the very poor, the impoverished on Medicaid, and for the frail elderly, because it must meet a $35 billion deficit, the people of the United States, and particularly the unionized workers, know that this is a direct assault upon them. After all, when President Bush sends to Congress an almost $400 billion budget, he doesn't even have a line item for the cost of the assault on the war on Iraq, not even the direct military cost, let alone the cost of the long-term occupation.
Which we have, in previous programs, documented the Nordhaus report estimating that in reality it will be close to $2 trillion, the sustained attack on Iraq, and the consequences for the American people. $2 trillion not included in this raid of the earnings, the raid of the living standards, the destruction of our well-being across the board in the United States.
Before we go on to some of the fabrications, Ralph, let's look at what was happening throughout the world. In Mostar, in Bosnia, the Muslims and the Croats united for anti-war protests. This was the first cross-community action in 7 years. In Cyprus, Turks and Greeks marched together. Now, what we have, it's important to note this, because what the press has been doing is stating over and again that the anti-war demonstrations that have been building, that have been growing, that have been escalating throughout the world were put together by marginal sectors of the population, when in fact the press must note now that it is everyone, each and every one is out on the streets.
There is a structural underpinning. There is a systemic character to what we are witnessing, to what we are experiencing. Capitalism, which controls 70% of the world's natural resources under the aegis of now 1% of the population of the United States, which, according to the latest figures in the New York Times, has amassed 95% of the wealth in its hands in the United States. This degraded system that concentrates wealth on such a scale in such few hands crosses all national boundaries in its relentless pursuit of resources and cheap labor and the driving down of living standards and the pauperization of vast billions of human beings. It is that underpinning which has created the realization amongst people across the planet that this struggle cannot be waged within the nation alone, that it is linked inexorably to a struggle of all peoples against an international capitalist system that exploits and visits war upon them.
Now, for over a year on Taking Aim, we have been documenting the exploitation, the assault on working peoples throughout the world, and arming you with information that you can use in your organizing efforts, meticulous documentation and analysis. Today we have a special 3-hour program, a contribution to the WBAI Fund Drive. And as you saw over the weekend with the demonstrations and how WBAI was the one and only source of information about what was going on, where to be, and what was taking place, and this was true for Pacifica stations throughout the United States. Now we know it is really important to support our listener-sponsored station. And so today, we will be announcing later in the show our premiums for the WBAI Fund Drive. So write down the number, 212-209-2950, so that you are ready to make your contribution to WBAI and also to support Taking AIM. Let's look at some of the fabrications that have been leading up to the U.S. assault on Iraq. Recently, there was an orange alert, and people went out and they were flooding the markets trying to buy duct tape and plastic to put over their windows, as if plastic and duct tape would get rid of any chemical coming in. It doesn't even get rid of water if you ever have had leaks on your windows and have tried to put plastic and duct tape to prevent the wind and leaks coming through. So what we had was this incredible orange alert. And last week, Ralph discussed what was the put forward as the reasons for this orange alert.
Well, Maya, the Newsweek account is extraordinary. We did cite it last week, and it under the headline, "What's Behind the Latest Orange Alert?" And it says, new intelligence reports point to multiple imminent attacks by Al-Qaeda against Jewish groups and Jewish-owned businesses in the United States. And the headline is followed by the following. The Bush administration has raised a national threat alert from yellow to orange after receiving intelligence reports of multiple imminent attacks against Jewish groups and Jewish-owned businesses. And it spells out in this article, and it's in conjunction and dependent upon information supplied by Abraham Foxman, the national director of the Anti-Defamation League, which is described in Newsweek as one of the leading Jewish civil rights groups. In fact, has been long established. The ADL is a spy operation that spies upon U.S. citizens for the FBI and for the Mossad, and in the past for the South African secret police, the BOS. Jewish-owned hotels, Jewish resorts, Jewish businesses, Jewish old age centers, Jewish facilities, including temples, are said to have been specifically targeted for chemical, biological, and radiological weapons. The rationale behind the orange alert, which remains in force.
And what happens? Homeland Security Secretary Tom Ridge, while saying there was no need to panic, said Americans must take precautions. And CIA Director George Tenet told the Senate committee that this was the most specific threat we have seen. Batteries of Stinger anti-aircraft missiles were set up around Washington and were patrolling the Capitol skies with F-16 fighter jets and helicopters. Airports were put on special alert. Throughout the United States, there was this heightened tension that there was going to be a terrorist attack. Now, the officials claimed that a captured Al-Qaeda member had told them that either Washington, New York, or Florida would be hit by a dirty bomb. And then what was revealed by the BBC? The terrorist suspect had probably lied when they were warned that attacks on the United States were imminent. This came out in the BBC report February 14th. Dubious threat.
Amplified in ABC and by MSNBC, wherein it is established that these are totally fabricated, manufactured pretexts for putting people on an alert status that caused panic and fear and was intended in its timing to demobilize the population, to terrorize and intimidate them, and to prevent this very mobilization that is escalated on a scale beyond all imagining of this ruling class and their puppet media. None have been prepared to understand, it seems, that the orange alert is a conscious effort to terrorize the population into submission, and the response has been the diametric opposite, an outpouring which reflects the fact that the distrust is not just about the prospect of war, but the distrust has to do with the terrorizing of the population and the false nature, the false flag character of the category of terror, which is, in fact, a pretext and a lie fabricated at the very top.
Ralph, this is nowhere more reflected than in Great Britain. You had told me about the percentages of the population that had supported the Conservative Party and the Labour Party. Why don't you tell our listeners about that?
Well, what we're talking about here is that the support for the Conservative Party in Britain has fallen to 34% and 33%, but now Labour has matched it. That is to say that 65%, two-thirds of the population now reject both Labour and the Conservative parties, are looking for alternatives, distrust Blair, Tony Thatcher as he is frequently called, that the parties of capital are seen to be lying to people and preparing for our mass repression in the name of permanent war. The fabrication about Orange Alert is a reflection of the fact that as the Toronto Star outlined, increasing numbers of people are responding to the reality that, quote, U.S. lies should not be leading us into battle once again. And in this remarkable article in the Toronto Star on February 16th, it details how there's a long history of pretexts for war at the very top. They're not even referring here to Operation Northwoods, which we've described so frequently on Taking Aim. Operation Northwoods, which called the Joint Chiefs of Staff calling for the flying of aircraft into buildings in U.S. cities and assassinating U.S. citizens and shooting down the rocket with carrying astronaut John Glenn and imputing this to the Cuban Revolution. No. The citation in the Toronto Star has reference to the Joint Chiefs of Staff meeting in Washington for the preparation of what was then called Operation Mongoose, a parallel plan, and this is what these documents disclose. Destroying Cuba's sugar crop and contaminating its food supplies in order to create the conditions for an American humanitarian invasion of Cuba. Indeed, Guatemalan soldiers disguised as Cubans were prepared by the Joint Chiefs of Staff to blow up their own warships in Guantanamo Bay, stage fake funerals for the victims, rig up a phony attack on a tourist charter flight complete with airplane debris floating in the ocean, persuading the United Nations and world opinion that the United States was suffering justifiable grievances, and to mount a campaign against Cuban terror, and indeed to begin a CIA-directed program targeting Cuban exiles in Miami, wounding people, shooting others, sinking boatloads of Cubans en route to Florida. These covert operations, and I'm quoting all this from the Toronto Star citing Operation Mongoose, to build up a seemingly series of unrelated incidents to create the image of the Cuban government as terrorist and an alarming threat to the peace of the Western Hemisphere, demonizing Fidel Castro and terrorizing the American people through these deliberate acts of U.S. state-sponsored terror in the name of the Cuban Revolution to prepare the American people to support an invasion of Cuba and a destruction of the entire infrastructure of that society. This article, which is a headline article in the Toronto Star, U.S. Lies Cannot Be Leading Us into Battle Again, elaborates not only upon Operation Mongoose, but upon the series of such pretexts for war that have colored American history throughout this century.
That's the Toronto Star, February 16th, and where you can go and read the complete article. Fabrication. Lies and fabrication. Lies and fabrication to make a case for an assault upon the peoples of the world and to impose a state of martial law here in the United States with the U.S. Patriot Act, the Homeland Security Department, and also to attack the gains of the working class over the past 100 years, unionization with the proposed imposition of privatization of half of the federal jobs, and also the contracting out of services at the city, the county, the state level that has been happening over the past number of years in the United States and also throughout the world. lies and fabrication? Well, people of the world are speaking out. We will not accept these lies and fabrication, and we will not accept the assault on the gains of the workers of the world.
The case of the purloined document was another of the headline issues that Taking Aim addressed with reference to the Powell Report to the United Nations, which was disclosed, as many of you now are fully aware, to be based upon a purloined graduate student document by two students. And the document itself, full of distorted information, which was further distorted by the Powell report itself. It's interesting to note that Al-Marashi, one of the students, was trained at the Defense Intelligence Agency's Monterey Language Institute in Monterey, California. But what's even more dramatic about this is that this Al-Marashi document, which was the purloined basis for the Colin Powell report to the United Nations, has now been revealed to be itself derived from something much more sinister indeed. The Coalition Information Center, the Washington-London government propaganda unit that crafted the Blair dossier and the major portions of Colin Powell's document of evidence, is derived from a 16-page white paper, Iraq, its infrastructure of concealment, deception, and intimidation, which was in fact prepared in the Israeli journal Middle Eastern Review of International Affairs, and it was and its proprietor, Dr. Barry Rubin, an American-born Israeli citizen, prepared these materials in relation to a Mossad and Central Intelligence Agency operation. Its center was the Center for Strategic Studies in Israel, and indeed Professor Rubin was not only a director, deputy director of this operation, but of the Hebrew University's Harry Truman Center, and of something called Gloria, director of the Global Research and International Affairs, and a senior fellow at the International Center for Counter-Terrorist Policy. All of these are linked to the, not just the Mossad, but to the Likud wing of the Zionist state, tied into the center, the Committee for the Present Danger, to the operations of Wolfowitz and Pearl and Armitage from the 1970s on to prepare for the systematic dismantling and fragmentation of each Arab state in turn. They crafted, they fabricated the data and the documentation under the guise of a graduate student's report, which serviced Blair and serviced Colin Powell in the purloined report before the United Nations.
Ralph, one of the permanent faculty of the Interdisciplinary Center at Herzliya in Israel is Dr. Uzi Arad. He's the director of the Institute of Policy and Strategy and the professor of government at the Lauder School of Government Policy and Diplomacy at Herzliya's Interdisciplinary Center. And Lauder refers to the Estee Lauder fortune, the cosmetic fortune. Before joining the IDC, between 1975 and 1999, Dr. Arad served with Israel's Mossad, the Foreign Intelligence Services, in senior position in Israel and overseas. That is a euphemism for saying that he was part of, similar to the CIA, fomenting coups and obstructing governments throughout the world. He was also the director of the intelligence division, and he was a foreign policy advisor to the prime minister. So we see here in an open fashion what is going on with the case of the purloined document and what was the basis for Colin Powell's presentation to the United Nations.
Because actually, Maya, this is just a revelation that confirms the fact that this entire scenario of permanent war, of fragmenting Iraq, of taking each country ad seriatim, of inventing the category of terror as the pretext, has as its origins the plans of Wolfowitz and Pearl, the Sunshine Warriors, the New York Times called him, But in fact, the documentation reveals that this center of Mossad and Central Intelligence Agency planning was linked as well to the Rich Foundation of Mark Litt, Avner Azoulay, the Mossad officer and director of the Rich Foundation, and the figures of Major General Meir Dagan, one of Ariel Sharon's most notorious figures and the current head of the Mossad. The head of the Mossad. And this ape is linked as well directly through Dr. Rubin to APEC, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, the official Israeli lobby in America. Middle East Quarterly is the propaganda journal of Daniel Pipes, and Rubin and Pipes were funded by the Bradley Foundation, one of the quartet of right-wing tax-exempt funds, along with the Smith Richardson Foundation, the Olin Foundation, and the Mellon Scaife Foundations. This is the apparatus of the so-called chicken hawks, the neoconservatives, the Wolfowitzes, the Pearls, the Armitages, the American Enterprise Institute. They are driving, along with their allies in the ruling class, this permanent war, and the purloined report derives not just from a graduate student, but from this apparatus of manipulation and deception, which gave us not only the permanent war, but the category of terror and the false flag operations which encompass 9/11.